7:51 a.m. on the Ides of March, March 15th, 2012. I was a little bummed that I missed Pi Day yesterday, 314. But, well. The little toe, the offending digit, is still a little bit swollen this morning, a little bit discolored. It still hurts a bit. But I managed to get my boot on without a great deal of discomfort. And as long as I'm careful how I walk, it doesn't seem to be causing too much trouble. I'll know in a little while when I get home, and then I have to take younger daughter to school. And when I get back from that, I'll be able to take my boot off and see if the issue has been re-exacerbated. I'm still very conscious of it. Every time it flexes, it gives a little kind of twinge. Sort of like a little electric shock in the side of my foot. This is not necessarily a really good thing to be doing, but on the scheme of things, I think it's more valuable for me to get the walk in than it is to really protect that toe quite as much as I have the last 36 hours or so. I haven't done a lot of walking. I haven't done a lot of standing. I put my shoes on only when I had to in order to drive. It's really interesting. It's one of those things that has not happened to me for years now. And I'm not exactly sure what has triggered this flare-up, but the flare-up it is. And we've got to deal with it. The other thing I did yesterday was take my anti-inflammatants in the morning as well. One of the things that the main treatment for this ankylosing spondylitis, ankylosing psoriatic arthritis, is that anti-inflammatants, I take the most powerful anti-inflammatant that's available in the U.S. and the largest dose that's allowed. And what that boils down to is 75 milligrams of indomethacin morning and night is the script. The problem is that anti-inflammatant makes me groggy. It makes me a little bit sleepy and very difficult for me to focus, at least for a couple of hours in the morning. So eventually it works out over the course of the day. But one of the things that I've discovered is that under most circumstances for most days, I have very good control over my arthritis if I just take it at night. What that means is, along with the mirtazapine at night, I take my pills and I have to be ready to go to bed in an hour because I'm not going to stay vertical after that. So it works out pretty well, and most days it actually has, and for most days for the last few years, it has been quite effective. I'm a little bit curious as to why it should have flared up just now. Perhaps it doesn't need anything more than an odd opportunity, and I can hope that this is not going to continue to be a problem. If it is, we've got to go back and talk to the rheumatologist again and see what's going on. So I'm hiking along quite sharply here this morning, trying to favor the outer toe by walking on the insides of my feet instead of the outsides. So pace at which we should come in around 18 or 19 minutes, I hope, in order to get a little bit more of a workout today. I started doing jumping jacks and curls and then push-ups beside my desk a couple times a day. And that's actually beginning to pay off, I think, already. I need to continue doing that. I actually need to up the ante and do it two or three times a day instead of once or twice a day. But we're already seeing the results of diet. I've been watching calorie intake. I've cut back to what I hope is around 1,800 calories a day, down from about 2,500. That should be enough to slowly pull the weight downward without being too much of a burden. I've also shifted to a lot more fresh vegetables. Last night was steamed Brussels sprouts with the roast turkey and a splurge, about 3/4 of a cup of mashed potatoes without gravy. The mashed white potatoes are pretty much pure carbs with a little bit of dairy fat added just for flavor. Not a really great idea. We've had either sweet potatoes or some other kind of non-starch side dish with meals pretty much the last 3 or 4 days. So a little bit here and there is not going to be too much of a problem. Gosh, all this traffic. I'm about 5-10 minutes later than normal because I was busy writing a blog post to my class. In my aggregator this morning, one of the places that I follow is Slashdot, and they have all kinds of geeky news on there. People there find all sorts of strange and wonderful things. And there was a new research study posted recently about friends and gaming, and that they studied a first-person shooter, Halo Reach, and looked at a lot of the demographics and psychometric data going into a huge number of Halo players, and found that group identity didn't matter as much as friendship mattered. So that people who gamed with their friends tended to do better in these kinds of first-person shooter environments where teamwork matters. They were really looking at how teamwork affected outcomes in terms of friendship bonds. And they isolated the friendship bond away from pickup groups, pugs, and strongly identified non-friend-based activities, so that a group that identified as part of the group very strongly but weren't necessarily friends were studied against groups that did not necessarily identify as a coherent group identity, but identified their relationship with the members of any given group as friends. And it's quite an extensive study. And the methodology, I took the methodology pretty much on face value. I looked it over. It looked reasonable. But the kicker, the real bottom line on it, is that a finding that was completely anti-stereotype, that the stereotype is that the older gamer lacks the reflexes and the skills necessary to survive in single-player mode, and as such has a lower ratio of success, a lower kill ratio, because they're counting how many times you actually succeed in battle in these shooter games, because they rely on groups to make up in firepower what they lack in individual skill. And skill is closely correlated to reflex in most minds. What they found, by a large margin, was that not only did older players not play mostly in groups, they played mostly as the lone wolf, as the solo player, And they outperformed on a direct correlation by age, anybody younger. So the odds of success in a first-person shooter go up the older you get. And this is totally counter to the notion of digital immigrant and digital native. It's something that I've been carping about ever since I ran across the idea 10 years ago. When Prensky first started putting this out, I was like, oh, so what does that make me, a digital immigrant, a digital native? I claim the title digital aboriginal since I've been working in this field since before it was a field. I have the advantage of being not just old, but having invented parts of the network myself, or at least have been around to watch it develop as it goes, and been cutting my teeth on this technology, on the edges of it, even as far back as 1982 or 3, even before. So this whole thing was just this digital aboriginal thing, this digital native idea, this digital immigrant thing has been used heavily by teachers as an excuse to not get involved in the technology. I'm too old for this. Kids just grow up with it and they naturally understand it, is the way the argument generally goes. But if that were the case, then the kids who have the highest reflex speeds, who have the most time to practice, who have the most inclination to play the games, should statistically be outperforming the older people. That is not the case. Or it wasn't the case in the study. I don't want to paint everything with too broad a brush, but this, it really confirms something that I have maintained all along. And it goes back to a really old idea, was it? Age and treachery will beat youth and speed every time. Not necessarily true, but I think it has a certain ring to it. This goes beyond that, because one of the things that they also found was that older players who played in groups did better. Their groups did better. There were fewer betrayals and therefore fewer negative marks against those groups, which means that the groups with older players in them tended to be more successful, have more kills, when the median ages of the groups was lower. So it was a very interesting study, and I wanted to post it to my teachers who have this tendency to want to say, oh, I'm 35 years old, oh, I'm 40 years old, I'm too old to learn this, I wasn't born to it, I didn't grow up in it, so I can't be expected to understand it. And it's sort of like, really? You really want to go there? You're 40 years old and you want to claim age as ignorance and you're a teacher. So I always struggle with this one. This is the one that just bugs the crap out of me whenever I run into it. And I run into it a lot, almost as much as I run into the learning styles idea. Because learning styles is a great excuse not to do something, just like being a digital immigrant is a great excuse not to do something. Oh, I can't learn it. I'm too old. Drives me crazy. So yeah, I had to go in and pull a pithy paragraph out of the middle of that study and then posted it along with the link to the PDF in my class so they'll be able to read it for themselves. It has huge implications for teachers and learning. It has huge implications for people who want to play the I'm too old and stupid to learn this. Because truth? No, you're not. No, you're not. One of the things that I find fascinating, one of the implications of this study is that while I think it's probably fairly well documented that physiologically reflex rates do go down as you get older. I mean, you can't really argue that a 17-year-old isn't as fast as a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old. It just doesn't make any sense. I think it's very well documented that physiologically, the reflexes are really much faster. But what it says is that if in spite of the difference in reflexes, what matters has much more to do with problem solving, has much more to do with when to use the reflex, has much more to do with decision making, and one would expect that logical decision making would improve the more expert you become at making decisions, and that decisions made in one arena help to train the decision-making process that becomes available and applicable in others. I mean, nobody learned how to make decisions. Nobody learned how to make choices in a first-person shooter. They're learning how to do that stuff outside the game and then bringing that skill in. Because, I mean, one of the big ideas in these games is how do you approach it? What is your strategic positioning? What is your tactical distribution? And what is your operational activity that allows you to succeed in the face of the opponent? This is huge, because it means that what we've known for quite some time is that these ideas of strategy, tactics, and operations are in fact key to success in a variety of venues, not the least of which are these game ideas, these online spaces, where for years people have been saying, if you don't have the reflexes, don't come in. I think it's fascinating. I think the other part of it that is probably interesting, and I didn't look to see, I should have. I'm wondering about network latency. If you're an older gamer, are you playing on a faster network? Can you afford to indulge yourself by getting the high-speed broadband rather than whatever your pots brings into the house? So are you more likely to have megabit level or 100 megabit level connection? So is your latency lower? Are you working on a higher-end machine where you don't have to deal quite so much with machine processing in order to succeed? I noticed that in particular when dealing with different kinds of machines, even in games that are not technically first-person shooters like Lord of the Rings Online, which is not a first-person shooter, although it has some of the characteristics of it. If you're spending a lot of time getting the screen painted in three dimensions, then your opportunities, your windows of availability for response are limited. So that's a factor as well. It makes an interesting question. Is it, are they really better because they're making better decisions? Are they really better because they are have learned the game more thoroughly? Are they really better because they are better tacticians, better strategists, or just because they have better machines? It's an interesting idea. I'll have to go back and look at that study and see if it's in there. So I was finally gratified to have some actual research that backs up something that I've held as a hypothesis for many years and really haven't had any way to get at in terms of how to address the issue itself. Trash day, here comes the trash dump. This morning I was clever and put the trash out before I went for my walk. If any luck at all, they'll get it today. I missed the recyclable truck the other week. As a result, I'm up to my armpits in crushed cans. I made it. Here we are. Made the loop. I'm back at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. Assuming my toe survives this walk, I'll talk to you then.